Hi. This was not supposed to be the next episode of the show. I still have the final regular episode to release, Legacy, but I'm waiting for something special to arrive before I can release that one. And then there's the listener memories of the dream season, and possibly some other surprises still to come, but recent events have changed that. Early in the morning on New Year's Day, my father, my best friend, my dad, passed away. It was fairly sudden, drawn out over the course of a week after suffering a stroke on Christmas night. I'm going to do my best to not make this a full story of his life, but he needs to have the spotlight shown on him, as this podcast would not exist without his influence on me. When I finally started releasing episodes of this project, I had hoped to have it done by Father's Day of 2022, as a gift to him. Obviously, that didn't happen, but the majority of it was done not long after Father's Day 2023. I'm saddened that he won't be able to hear the final episodes, nor be able to include his memories, so I'm hoping that this episode will accomplish that. My dad, Albert Edwards, was born in 1944 and grew up on Fisher's Island, a small island off the coast of southeastern Connecticut. It was, and is, technically part of New York State, but is basically Connecticut due to the proximity to Connecticut and because New London is the home port for the ferry to get to the island. Fisher's Island is a small island, and during the 1950s, the island boasted a robust population of nearly 500 people, compared to the 225 or so that live here today. The class sizes at the school were small, but still managed to produce some pretty good athletes. Growing up, my dad played many sports with his older brothers and other island kids. According to an article in the New London Day in June of 1957, he won a foul shooting contest when he was in eighth grade. Apparently, the Day printed a lot of random local news stories back then. He earned his varsity letter in basketball his freshman year. And that's when I believe his connection to the University of Connecticut began. His coach, beginning during the 1956-57 season, his eighth grade year, was Constantine Chigger. Coach Chigger was a 1956 graduate of UConn, earning a degree in physical education. He and his wife moved to Fisher's Island that fall and began teaching phys ed and coaching. My dad talked about Coach Chigger often, but I don't recall hearing anything about him and any connections to UConn. But in doing some research, I found that Coach Chigger incorporated his alma mater into his teachings. In April of 1959, near the end of my dad's sophomore year, Coach Chigger invited Robert Kennedy, the head of intramural sports at UConn, to speak at their end-of-the-year banquet. Mr. Kennedy also brought film of UConn's 75-53 victory over Fordham from January to show to the kids. Kennedy would go on to become the head coach of the men's track and cross-country teams at UConn for more than 25 years before retiring in 1985. That 1958-59 UConn squad, coached by Hugh Greer, finished 17-7, losing in the first round of the NCAA tournament to Boston University, 60-58. Hey, look, a parallel to the dream season. Just 31 years later, UConn would avenge that loss in the first round of the tournament. The following summer, my dad, along with his good friend Peter Waddington, whom he maintained a lifelong friendship with, attended Boys State on the campus in Storrs. Between that week on campus, most likely playing some ball in the fieldhouse, along with Coach Chigger's influence, certainly instilled the love of UConn men's basketball in my dad that he would eventually pass on to me. After graduating high school in 1962, my dad joined the Navy, serving aboard the USS Kearsarge, an aircraft carrier based out of Long Beach, California. He played pickup games with some notable people, including Joe Bellino, the 1960 Heisman Trophy winner from Navy. After leaving the Navy in 1966, he was recruited to play basketball for some small schools, including Columbia Basin College in Pasco, Washington, before attending West Valley College in Chapman, California. I assume that he played basketball there, but sadly, I'm not 100% sure. And again, if he did, I'm sure I would have heard about it a few hundred times over the years. He eventually moved back east before marrying my mom in 1969. They settled in East Hartford and attended many Hartford Capitals games, whose roster featured former UConn star Wes Balasubnia. I was born in 1973, and we lived in Manchester, Connecticut. Some of my earliest memories are sitting in our kitchen, presumably eating dinner, with the sounds of Arnold Dean and sports talk on WTIC 1080 coming from the radio. My dad claimed that he was at the Civic Center for the UConn-UMass game in January 1978, before the roof collapsed a few hours later. My mom can't confirm that, but also can't dispute it, so we'll let him have that one. He most certainly attended more UConn games during the 70s. My parents ended up divorcing in 1979, with my dad moving to Ledyard and my mom settling in Torrington. This is the point where things become clear for me in terms of memories and recall. At that time, my dad was working at Triangle Wire and Cable in Jewett City, Connecticut, as a distribution manager. He eventually formed a friendship with Dave Messier, who worked for Norwich Express, a trucking company in Basra, Connecticut. Dave was our primary source of tickets to UConn men's basketball games. I'm not 100% sure of the first game that he took me to, but I have a solid, educated guess. It was Saturday, February 27th, 1982. The mighty Georgetown Hoyas and their super freshman Patrick Ewing were the opponents for Senior Day at the Hartford Civic Center. The reason I'm sure this is my first game is the indelible memory of me being extremely sad. My only exposure to UConn at this point was the aforementioned Arnold Dean talk, occasional local news highlights of a game, looking through UConn yearbooks that were mixed in with Sports Illustrated's at my dad's, and whatever he told me about the team and the players. So there I am, 8 years old, sitting in the Civic Center, and before the game even starts, there's a ceremony on the court. Three players, Mike McKay, Chuck Alexinis, and Corny Thompson, are being presented with flowers by their parents. Apparently, this is the final time that these players will be playing in front of the home crowd, as they're seniors and will be graduating after the season. I remember being so sad, and every single senior day that I've been to since that day has moved me. Anyway, Georgetown won the game handily, 60-42. UConn would lose a heartbreaker in their Big East tournament opener a few days later against St. John's, which was also held at the Civic Center, and the season would end with an NIT loss at Dayton, 76-75. Georgetown would fall in the national championship game to Michael Jordan in North Carolina a few weeks later. That game began a tradition of going to as many games as possible. It certainly wasn't every game, and in fact, it was only a handful, if that, most seasons. Games would have to have been played on the weekend that I happened to be visiting my dad, and usually just afternoon games in Hartford. The usual scenario went something like this. My dad would pick me up in Torrington around 9:30 a.m. on a Saturday. We would head to Hartford, but make a pit stop at the McDonald's in Unionville on Route 4. I'd have some hotcakes, he'd have some coffee, and we'd continue on to Hartford. We'd arrive at the Civic Center early and do some shopping. There was a bookstore, a candy store, and most importantly, the Hartford Whalers team store. After the shopping, we'd enter the Coliseum, grab a program and some of that famous Civic Center pizza, which I can still taste to this day, and sit in our usual seats, halfway up in section 214, above the UConn bench. Over the next five seasons, we would attend those Saturday afternoon games, and usually a Connecticut Mutual Classic game while I was enjoying Christmas vacation. Watching Earl Kelly play was a highlight, but sadly, his off-the-court troubles tended to be the larger story. Games started to become more memorable in the 1986-87 season. I was now 13 years old, and the Huskies had a fiery new head coach, Jim Calhoun. That first season provided one of the best memories for me during this era. Again, senior day at the Civic Center, this time for Jerry Besselink, on Saturday, February 28, 1987. Seton Hall was the opponent, and the Huskies were wrapping up a dismal campaign for Calhoun's first season. They entered the game with an 8-18 record and were without the services of their two best players, Cliff Robinson and Phil Gamble, who were suspended for academic issues. The announced attendance that day was 8,130. But that was probably generous. During the first half, I noticed a lot of empty seats directly behind the UConn bench. In fact, there were one row behind where Cliff and Phil were watching the game. At halftime, I made my move. I walked right down and sat there like they were my seats the whole time. Cliff and Phil each signed my program, which was an incredible memory, and the Huskies won a thriller, 56-54, earning a curtain call from all of us who stayed to the end. I also took a bunch of pictures that day with a really bad camera, and they continue to be a prized possession of mine. A few months after that game, in August, my father brought me to the UConn campus for the first time to drop me off for a week of hoops at Jim Calhoun's basketball camp. I roomed at McMahon Hall with a kid from Holy Cross in Waterbury. I've forgotten his name, but he and I would see each other over the next few years when Torrington High and Holy Cross matched up in hoops. My coach that week was the great Jerry Besselink. My main memories from camp were how wonderful Jerry was, what a great guy Dave Lato was, how tall Bill Lanesse was, seeing the giant hole in the ground next to the field house where Gamble would soon be sprouting from, and doing a lot of running in Geyer Gym. I also remember my dad being there on the final Friday to watch our games and to see us receive our awards. My first time watching a game at the field house would come a few months later for the opener of the 1987-88 season against Maryland Eastern Shore. Being so close to the action was a treat, as was the 102-63 UConn win. My dad and I would return to the field house for one of, if not the greatest game that we saw together, the NIT quarterfinal matchup against Virginia Commonwealth. Dad picked me up after school that Friday afternoon, and off we went for the loudest, hottest, most exciting game I'd ever experienced up to that point. They were on their way to the Final Four. Well, the NIT Final Four, but who can expect UConn to make it to the real Final Four, right? My dad went to both the NIT semis and the finals at MSG, and we thought that was as good as it could get. Little did we know. I'm going to skip over some other highlights in an effort to keep this episode relatively brief, but I can't skip over the dream season. I went to 3 games that season, Syracuse, Pittsburgh, and California, but only one of those with my dad. That was the Syracuse game, which to me was the launching point of the run. Somehow we ended up sitting in seats reserved for wheelchairs, right at the top of Section 101. Aside from the win, which was incredible, the enduring memory for me was the loud booing of the officials as they walked off the floor at halftime. My dad went to the Georgetown game a few nights later, so he was lucky enough to enjoy both games that magical week. We watched the opening night of Gamble and the Big East tournament together on TV. As for the shot, neither of us actually saw Tate's shot go through the hoop live. I'll share my story in another episode, but my dad was so despondent after Tate missed the jumper, he took our dog Trapper out for a walk, certain that the game was over. As I got older and graduated high school, our opportunities to go to games together dwindled, but certainly did not go away. We saw Lindsey Hunter single-handedly end the 1991-92 season, and we watched an incredible freshman named Ray Allen explode on the scene in 1994, amongst other moments. We were also in the house for the famous UConn women and Tennessee Lady Vols matchup in 1995. My dad moved to North Carolina briefly in the spring of 1998. While there, he was able to be at Greensboro Coliseum to watch Rip Hamilton's buzzer beater to beat Washington in the Sweet 16. That same day, he also ran into one Jim Calhoun. They exchanged information, and later that summer, Coach Calhoun was my father's guest for a round of golf on Fisher's Island. Coach invited my dad to a game the following season, and we had pretty good seats to see the Huskies destroy Michigan State during the 1998-99 championship season. We went to the 2003 Big East Tournament semifinals and watched UConn beat Carmelo Anthony and Syracuse. We watched the 2004 and 2014 national championship games together. We went to the welcome home rallies at Gamble in 2011 and 2014. I FaceTimed him from my seat as the final seconds ticked off the clock in Houston in April of 2023. My dad had a lot of favorite players, and a few that he moaned and groaned about on occasion. He was partial to Gavin Edwards because of his surname, and that he also wore his favorite number, 33. But his all-time favorite player, which I thankfully had the foresight to ask him this past week while he was in the hospital, was Daron Sheffer. My dad never missed watching a game on TV. Over the past 30-plus years, when most games were televised, I'd be shocked if he missed more than 5. The last UConn game my father watched was the St. John's game on Saturday, December 23rd. Ironically, I attended that game with my daughter. It was her first time at a game in 20 years. We sat in section 114, as I wanted her to have a better view than what I usually had, sitting up in 214. I probably drove her crazy that night, pointing out the seats that I sat in with my dad, where we would get our food, how there used to be a mall right here, etc. I do know that my dad was happy that we were in the building that night. I'm still incredibly heartbroken and stunned that my dad is no longer here. Those of you who have lost a parent most certainly understand that feeling. I called my dad twice a day, every day. We would always talk about the weather, my daughter, the Mets, the Dolphins, my fantasy football teams, my dogs. But most of the talk, especially in the winter, focused solely on the UConn men's basketball team. Knowing that I won't be doing that ever again crushes me. It's taken me a while to write these words and even longer to record them without bawling like a baby. But this podcast simply would not exist if it wasn't for my dad. He instilled in me a love for this basketball program. I needed to put something out there to honor him and to thank him for passing his love of UConn basketball on to me. In a strange twist of fate, my dad died due to heart disease, which is a cause that is near and dear to Jim Calhoun. Coach Calhoun and his wife Pat each lost a parent to heart disease, inspiring them to generously support cardiology research at UConn Health over the past 3 decades. If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, please consider making a donation to the Pat and Jim Calhoun Cardiology Fund to honor both my dad and Coach Calhoun. I want to sincerely thank everyone who has been remotely associated with the UConn men's basketball program over the past 40 years. Every coach, every player, and anyone who did anything to help put a game on in any capacity. I want to especially thank Kevin Ollie, Dan Hurley, and the greatest coach in the history of the sport, James Calhoun, for giving my dad and I the incredible and at one time unthinkable joy of watching UConn win 5 national championships. Finally, I want to thank you, Dad, for being a fantastic role model, my mentor, my best friend, for everything. I love you and I miss you.